All right, this morning we're going to do something a little different than what we normally do. Now, in a sense it's different, in a sense it's not. Anytime we do something that's not the way we usually do, there's always questions and wonderings and all that stuff. And so I'll assure you of a few things. One, we'll be looking through this book called I Will by Tom Rainer. Now, what you should know about this book called I Will by Tom Rainer is it is filled with scripture. This is not a book that's just kind of a fix-it, self-help kind of book that you would find in a bookstore. It is all Bible-based. And it is about the church and the things that we can do as people within the church. It is a follow-up to I Am a Church Member that we looked at about a year and a half ago now. And where I Am a Church Member began a lot with our attitudes and how we should we be rebuilding those and making them more positive, less negative, less critical, more constructive, things of that nature. This picks up at the next step, which is, okay, now that my attitude is right, what is it that I'm going to do? And the way that Rainer describes it is, how do I make myself from who I am now into an outwardly focused Christian? And he bases this on any number of things, but one of the largest ones is statistics about non-Christians today. I saw a statistic yesterday that 76% of Muslims and Hindus do not have a Christian friend. Which conversely probably means that a pretty large percentage of Christians don't have a Muslim or a Hindu friend. There's a statistic that Rainer put in one of his books that is something between 80 and 90% of people have never been invited to church by a Christian neighbor. At the same time, 70% of those people said if they were invited to church, they would probably go. Now, not necessarily regularly, not necessarily joining, but if you were to go to your neighbor and say, hey, we'd love for you to come for whatever this is, they actually are more likely to say yes than no, which is kind of shocking, I think, to most of us. Most of us would assume that people just don't feel that way. People aren't sitting around waiting for something to do on Sunday other than watch some football. And for a lot of people, they would be open to that idea. And so Rainer starts this book with the idea of, okay, if we are Christians and we profess to be Christians and our attitudes begin to change, what is it that we're going to do? But he begins with the idea of going over our attitudes. What is your attitude about church? Now, I like to think for most of us it is positive. Now, I do find that it is more positive when we are doing something that is positive, too. A few weeks ago now, we were out in the foyer on a Friday evening, and we were cutting denim jeans to make shoes. I found out last week that we made 76 pairs of shoes, which I thought was just pretty incredible. And these jeans will get combined with recycled tires in Africa, and they will go on the feet of children, shoes for kids that didn't have shoes before. And because of these shoes, they will live healthier lives and have less trouble with parasites and things like that. And the people were pretty excited, even folks like me who hate cutting and hate patterns and all of those things because I'm not good at it. And I stay away from the fabric scissors because they're dangerous and they get me into trouble. Even people like me during that Friday evening really just had a good time out there because what we were doing was not about us. What is our attitude about church? What was your attitude this morning? When my first alarm went off at 7 o'clock, my attitude was not great. When alarm number two went off at 7:10, it might have been slightly better. And then when the fail-safe at 7:30 went off, it was time to get up and to go. And some mornings, I am excited about being here. Other mornings, it's kind of, I have to push myself and make myself go. And I would imagine a lot of us experience the same thing. I remember when our kids were smaller, what an adventure it was to try to get here. I remember what an adventure it was to try to corral everybody and all of that. My wife is probably laughing on the inside as if that was my job. But there are challenges sometimes coming here. And then we get here. And who is the first person you see when you get out of your car when you get here? And that probably changes week by week, unless you're one of those 1035, 1040 people, and then it's the same crowd, you know each other. But for most of us, we see somebody different, and depending on who that is you see as you come in, it actually might affect how you feel about the rest of the morning here. You might see somebody that smiles at you. When I was a youth intern in Valdosta, Georgia in the summer of 1994, Ernest Green was one of our elders. He was the oldest of the elders, really, really nice guy, and Ernest was always smiling. And if I saw Ernest fairly early on a Sunday, it's going to be a good day. Ernest got my attitude right, did help me get to where I needed to be. For each of us, our attitudes are determined by a lot of things. As we sit here, our attitudes are determined by, does this sound like something I care about hearing about today? Does it not? What did Tyler choose with songs? What was up with that one song that it was just a chorus and I didn't know it? And I learned a new song this morning, and some of us are happy to learn a new song, and some of us are, all those new songs, what's up with that? What determines our attitude about being here? And Rainer will examine in the first part of the book here four biblical attitudes about church. And he begins in Ephesians chapter 4. And this is a concept we talked about last year when we looked at this the other book, which is, I am a unifying church member. And he talks about unity, Paul does in Ephesians chapter 4. As a prisoner for the Lord, then, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Now, if I tell you that your job as a Christian is to live a life, and that's the way Paul describes it, live a life worthy of the calling you have received, would you assume that that means that you're supposed to do something one day out of seven? I want you to live a life that looks like this. Would you assume, okay, Sundays, between the hours of 10:30 and whenever that guy stops talking, my life should look like this? And then the rest of the time, it's something entirely different. And for some reason, church around the world, for a lot of folks, has become that. It looks like one thing when we're in that mode. It looks like one thing when we're in that place. And the rest of the time, people would have no idea that any of this matters. They don't see the evidence of it in our lives. And so when he says to live a life worthy of how you've been called, we represent Christ wherever it is that we go. We represent Christ, whatever it is that we're doing, whoever it is that we are with. And he continues, be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. I hate to tell you this, but you cannot do church alone. Now, some of us try. Some of us love to get in here and out of here as quickly as possible and go on with the rest of our day. Some churches have adapted to that. There was a church in Little Rock that I used to hear the advertisements for on the radio when we lived in Arkansas, and they advertised their 30-minute service. So you can come and get your church on in 30 minutes and get on with your day. And it was a popular service, apparently, because people could come and go, and almost like the drive-through church. All the ministers used to kind of laugh about it, but it had quite a following. I think for some of us, we like to just kind of, it's me and God and that's it, and there's not this element of others. When I was a college student, when I first went away to school at Harding, when I would go to church on Sunday morning, it was a church of about 1,600 people, and I wanted to get in there and get out of there with as little human contact as possible because I'm an introvert, which is weird because I stand here in front of you and talk to you every week, but that's me. I am not a chit-chatty, small-talk kind of guy. And the thought of having to figure out what to talk to all these strangers I don't know about was frightening to me. And so I would get there about 2 or 3 minutes late, so things would have already started and I don't have to worry about anything. And I would try to get out of there as quickly as I could. And I think a lot of us, that becomes kind of the church experience. Let's get in and out of there. Let's not get held up by anything. Now, that's a little bit of what we may do on a Sunday morning. If you ever were to mistakenly show up here on a Wednesday night, it's a totally different thing. You cannot get out of here on a Wednesday night. You can try, but you're not going to get out because we like to talk and we like to hang around and people bring vegetables and we share them. And we have this camaraderie about Wednesday evening. I've thought if somebody who was a peripheral member that thought these people are not friendly ever showed up on a Wednesday night, they would see like a whole different thing. It's with one another. The point of church is not just me and God. The point of church is not showing up here for an hour and punching the time card. The point of church is doing life with one another. And so we are humble, gentle, patient, and we are bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Make every effort. Okay, and I want you to think about that for a minute. This is not something that we kind of try to do. This is unity is not something that if we happen to hit this is great, but it's going to be accidental for us to get there. Unity is something that we need to make every effort to get toward, which means you will have a lot more opportunities to be in disunity than in unity. You're going to have to attempt to be in unity. It's going to take work. Think of times that you have been unified with other people, and when have those times been? Usually, if you're an athlete of any kind or were an athlete long, long ago, you can think of being on a team and the unity that came with that. In the scout groups, you can think of the unity that comes with being a part of that group. And a lot of times you may disagree with folks, but you work through those things. And for us as Christians, for us as a church, part of our attitude needs to be this attitude of unity where we work through the times that we don't feel unified. Secondly, I'm a sacrificial church member. Now, what does that mean? Now, we have the example of Jesus in Philippians chapter 2. He says, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage or something to be grasped, if you have the older version. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Christ was willing to sacrifice for us. Christ was willing to sacrifice for his church. Now, for most of us, that is never going to mean our death. It's not going to be something that we have to lay our life on the line for this. But what it is going to mean is, are we willing to set aside some of our own wants and needs and desires for the good of the church? And if the answer to that is no, we need to take a good, hard, long look in the mirror. If our first reaction to things is to criticize them, we are not being sacrificial. If our first reaction to things is, that's not what I want, we are not being sacrificial. If our first reaction to things is constantly to find the negative in it, that is not being sacrificial. What is being sacrificial? The understanding that occasionally, as part of a group, somebody else is going to get their way and I'm not, and that's okay. Occasionally, as part of a group, the way I would choose to do something is not the way that other folks would choose to do something. Sometimes, as part of a group, leaders are going to make a decision that I disagree with, and as long as that decision is not unbiblical, I can carry on. It's being sacrificial in what we do. Third, I am a prayerful church member. And we see this in a lot of Paul's letters. Here, the example is Colossians chapter 1. For this reason, since the day we heard about you, we have not stopped praying for you. We continually ask God to fill you with the knowledge of his will, through all the wisdom and understanding that the Spirit gives, so that you may live a life worthy of the Lord and please him in every way. And notice a repetition here of that being worthy of our calling that we see. Are we praying for each other in the church? Are we praying for the church as a whole? Are we praying for how the church here that meets at 2424 North Kinsey, how we can reach out to our community better? Are we praying not that the church will see things my way, but that maybe I can adapt better than I do? And from a pretty unadaptable guy, believe me, I need to pray that prayer. And fourth, bearing every fruit and good work, growing in the knowledge of God. Fourth, he says, I am a joyful church member. Now, I told you about Ernest Green. I also have known lots of church folks over the course of time that are grumpy. Grumpy, grumpy, grumpy. And believe me, I can be grumpy. I have a church secretary that works in the office next to me who loves Christmas. And if you know Denise, you know exactly what I'm talking about. She already told me, I think a week ago, that there were 17 more Fridays or something like that before Christmas. I walked into a store the other day. I saw a Christmas display. And I said, Denise has been here. I get kind of grumpy about Christmas until December, or at least after Thanksgiving. A lot of us are grumpy about a lot of things, though, aren't we? Our initial reaction is just, ah. And when it comes to church stuff, we have the option of, are we going to be grumpy or are we going to be joyful? Are we going to be grumpy about, I pick on the new song, old song thing a lot. One of these songs, and Tyler has no idea that I'm going here, Listen to Our Hearts, that we sang a minute ago. I hate that arrangement. There's two of them, and the other one, the tenor part, is cool. This one, the tenor part, I'm like, what? Who did that? What is that? And as I'm looking at it, I think to myself, oh, it's the other one. And then I think to myself, but it's, I love the song, because think about what the song is saying to God. Listen to our hearts. Hear our spirits sing. Song of praise that flows from those who are redeemed. Now, someone didn't write that 300 years ago in hymn form. It was not in the old 728B books. It is an incredible Christian thought to have. Listen to our hearts and hear our spirits sing. And I can very quickly either pick on it because it's a new song or pick on it because it's the wrong arrangement. No offense, Tyler. But I can also look at it and say, what a great thought to have for God this morning. Am I going to be joyful or am I going to be grumpy? Paul puts it this way in Philippians, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say it, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Not let your grumpiness be evident to all. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Don't be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. Are we going to be joyful or are we going to be grumpy? And if we present our requests to God and we're joyful, the peace of God, which transcends all understandings, will guard our hearts and our minds in Christ Jesus. So with joy, with the lack of grumpiness, comes peace. Excuse me. And not just peace, but a peace that passes all understanding. And at times when you have felt completely at peace, do you ever wish you could have less of that? I had a morning that I took my family to the airport not too long ago, and after I dropped them off, I drove over to the Vista House on the Columbia River Gorge and waited for the sunset. Not something I normally do because none of those three alarms on Sunday are that early. And I'm waiting, just waiting, and then all the oranges and reds and everything appear, and it was just a great moment. Would I like more moments like that? Yeah, I think I would. But what am I doing to get there? Are we being joyful about things or are we being grumpy? As we near a close here, I debated a lot with it being 9/11 about how to address that, especially since it's not, at least on the surface, something that seems like it goes along with what we're doing, but yet at the same time, it's something that if you turn on a television or a radio or anything today, you're going to be approached by it, and you will have that moment of where was I that day? This is my generation's JFK moment, where everybody knew where they were when JFK was killed. In my generation, it's this. And I think of that morning, I got a call at my house. I worked next door to the church office, they said, you're not going to believe what's going on. A plane just ran, it was after the first tower. And so I went over to the office, and we talked about it a little bit. And then shortly later online, we saw the news of the second plane, and we started to realize something very unusual was going on. And I spent the rest of the morning back at my house next door installing a satellite dish, back in the days that you had to install those things instead of calling somebody. And because I wanted to see the news, I wanted to know what was going on. And by midday, I got it on there and then just parked in front of the TV and watched this stuff all day. I don't know where you were that day, what your experience was like, but I want to tell you the story of some people who were on a plane. And I'll read part of this and kind of work through part of it. These folks were on Delta Flight 15. Delta Flight 15 was going from Frankfurt to America. I'm not sure where their original landing was intended to be. About 5 hours out of Frankfurt, the flight attendant, one of the flight attendants on the plane, begins a story. She gets a call to go to the cockpit to see the captain, and there the crew has that all business look on their face. She knows something's up. She's not quite sure what. The captain handed her a printed message. It came from Atlanta, where Delta is headquartered. It was addressed to their flight, and it simply said, all airways over the continental U.S. are closed. Land ASAP at your nearest airport that you can find. And they had never had any message like this before, weren't quite sure what to do. They knew it was serious. They knew they needed to get on the ground quickly. They're over the ocean. And so they're trying to figure out what to do. They figured out that the nearest airport was 400 miles away, and it was on the Canadian island of Newfoundland in the town of Gander. town of 11,000 people. So a pretty small town, not an airport that's suited for a whole lot of this. Quick request was made to the air controller there in Canada, and the approval to land in Gander was made immediately. So they found out later why the controller didn't hesitate. They found out about everything that was going on in New York and in Washington and in Pennsylvania. They decided that they were going to lie to the passengers. And so they got on the mic and said that they had something that was an issue with instrumentation, and they were going to need to land unexpectedly, and everything was fine. There wasn't going to be a crash or anything like that, but they just were going to need to land soon. And so they got on the ground, and by the time they got on the ground, they found out that they were here in Gander with about 40 other planes, and several planes in the same predicament as them. And as people started to look out their windows and see all these planes on the ground, not where planes are supposed to be, they realized something was up. And so word gradually got around as to what was happening. Gander promised that they would help out with any medical issues that there were, but they had to stay on the tarmac for hours. And they were on the tarmac in this plane for about 30 hours. If you could imagine what that would be like, how tiring that would be. There was a pregnant woman on the plane that was one of the passengers. And so as they finally made it through this ordeal, got off the plane, they were taken into town and surrounding towns, and people were put up in school gymnasiums. People were put up in homes. This pregnant woman on the plane was put up in a home that was right across the street from an urgent care facility, just in case. People fed them. People gave them money to do laundry because all their suitcases were still on the planes. And they ended up spending the night there in Gander. They got to know the people of the town. It was an experience unlike any other that they had ever had on a flight. And although they were incredibly inconvenienced and missing home, they also understood they were safe and were thankful for that. When they all came back to get on the plane, when everything had been cleared and they could finally fly home, they took pictures. You ever been on a plane, a flight with a bunch of strangers and decide to take a group picture? The stewardess, or flight attendant, sorry, I'm not politically correct. The flight attendant made the comment that it was like these people had been on a cruise together for a couple days. They were all exchanging stories about the places that they had stayed. They had this new bond that they had never had before. And they got on the plane to fly back to where they were going. And on the flight, a guy came up to the stewardess and said, "Is there any way I could use the PA system for a minute?" And so he gets on the PA system, and he's a doctor, and he's on his way to where he's going. And he talks about his experience there in Gander and the friendliness of the people. And he said, "I would like to start a scholarship fund for the kids of this town." And so they passed around a "I'm willing to donate" sheet, and everybody put their name and an amount on it, and they collected on this flight $15,000 for the people of Gander. There were 212 passengers, I believe, on the flight. $15,000 collected for the people of Gander. When he got home, he decided, this is a good idea. We should just open this up to people in general. And as of now, from what I have read, that fund has $1.5 million in it and has sent 134 kids to college. Now, I say all that to say this. These people's bond was something that lasted 2 or 3 days. Strangers they had never met, people from all walks of life, all political persuasions, small town, big city, professional, unprofessional, rich, poor, and everything in between. And their only bond was this life-changing moment where they were all together. And the people of the town did the right thing by taking strangers in, and the people on the plane did the right thing by repaying. What are we doing as a church? Is this just something that we come and we listen and we sing and we do, and it's an hour of it or a week, and then we carry on with everything else? Or are we doing something different than that? And the focus of where we're going to be going over the coming weeks is moving from I can to I will. I can change my attitude. I can quit worrying about how I would like things to be and start worrying about how everybody would like things to be, or how, better yet, God would like things to be. I can stop worrying about if it's a new song or an old song and just sing the song. I can start praying for the people here and for the church and for my attitude and for everybody else's attitude and all of that, but what are we doing? What is it that I will be as a Christian? What is it that I will be as a member of this church? And for these folks on that couple days, it all came into focus because it was forced that way. It's harder to force here, isn't it? We can't just all decide, well, let's get all this church stuff right by Tuesday. We have to work at it a little bit more than that. But if we begin with our attitudes, if we begin with an attitude of unity, if we begin with an attitude that we're going to be joyful instead of grumpy, if we begin with an attitude that we're going to be prayerful about these people around us, then the actions will come. So this morning, I think we just ask each of ourselves, what are we doing? What is our attitude about church? What is our attitude about the other people? What is our attitude about what my responsibility is, what your responsibility is? And are we going to make this something that is our lives, or is it just going to be a meeting we go to once a week for an hour and then we carry on with other things? And I think for us, the intent is that it be life-changing. The intent is that we never be the same because of our encounter here with Jesus and with his people. And this morning, if you are here and you think to yourself, well, if that's what church is supposed to be, that actually sounds pretty good. I agree with you. And I wish we were better at that, and I hope we will get better at that. But I would love for you to be a part of that. I would love for you to be a part of helping us all as we grow toward Christ. And so if you'd like to take him on in baptism this morning and become a part of this body, we would love to see that happen. This morning, if it's something public that you need to confess or something in your prayers for, this is a great time for that. But more than that, this morning, if what we've talked about here does not describe where you're at with church, spend some time talking to God about that today. Spend some time fixing some of those relationships that need to be fixed. Spend some time beginning to realize that church is about the doing, not so much the attending. And for all of us, then we become a better piece of our community that hopefully will want to know more about him. If there's anything you need this morning, please come while we stand and sing.